Welcome to the CTOX podcast. This is the place to be if you're a technology leader navigating the fractional CTO landscape. I'm Marisa Brassfield, joined by Lior Weinstein, the visionary behind CTOX.
Here, we cut through the noise to deliver actionable insights for CTOs at every stage, whether you're looking at your first five-figure client or actively building systems to scale.
That's right. You'll learn principles, not just tactics, to transform your technical expertise into a thriving fractional practice. Let's dig in. Welcome back to the CTOX podcast. Your clients don't pay you to be neutral. They pay you to see clearly and express your unique perspective. And seeing clearly requires both bias and curiosity. Today, we're unpacking one of the most important but least understood parts of being a fractional leader or advisor, which is how do you trust your own judgment without letting your biases blind you? By the end of this episode, you'll know how to use your bias as a strength and how curiosity keeps that strength from becoming a liability. Now, I've got to frame this up, Lior. This episode came about because I was asking you a viewer question about how you minimize your bias when you're working with your clients. And you said something that was just a typical Lior mic drop moment. I'd love if you could replay that for us.
Yeah. You asked me, how do I minimize your bias? Or he asked me, how do I minimize your bias? And I said, clients are buying my bias. That's all I do. That's why they're paying me money. Your bias is really just your accumulated judgment. It's your greatest asset. As a fractional CTO, if you're an advisor or you're embedded already in the company, whatever it is, they're basically saying, we have this technology question. Maybe it's servers, maybe it's product, maybe it's security, doesn't matter what it is. But they don't have the tools or the experience to know the answer. So they're looking to you. Even if they go to ChatGPT, ChatGPT doesn't come with the experience. It might come with the information. So they want to tune into what's your intuition from all of your experience, which is really what bias is.
So funny. How does pattern recognition help you move faster and deliver higher value insights when you're working with clients?
So one of the things we talk about in the Accelerator is the value of being focused on a niche, for example. And there's a mechanical advantages of just the efficiency you get on marketing, efficiency you get on sales, efficiency you get on reputation, but also how you actually run through the week. Because if you have a meeting at 10 a.m. with a manufacturer and at 2 p.m. with an advertising agency, you're solving very, very different problems. But if you're within the same niche, you're generally going to solve the same problems in different continuums because some companies are going to be a little bit behind, some companies are going to be a little bit ahead. But the problem space is going to be fairly familiar, and being able to kind of look at whatever problem or opportunity organization has and look at your history, either with your current clients or your past clients, whatever that is, and saying, oh, I've seen this before. So you can just make a decision right now. They don't need to wait a week. You can give them instant value because you already had spent the $1 million worth of that mistake or the 6 months or whatever that is. So being able to tap into the variety of your experience and look at the different patterns of what's coming up allows you to just give them the answer straight. The faster you give them the answers, the more credible you are, the more value you're giving. That's also something we talk about in the Accelerator. When people are like, oh, I want to throttle, right? I don't want to give them all the answers in week one. I'm like, no, give them in week one. Don't you think they want the answer sooner, especially in a retainer model? You want to be able to over-deliver. So your ability to tap into whatever patterns of operations are happening and you already know the answer or know the risk allows you to build credibility, command higher prices, and also just really be able to be in a position where you constantly over-deliver.
Yeah, I love the generosity of sharing your unique experience and expertise, because those perspectives really, that's what sets everybody apart individually and makes you different from someone who has the exact same resume on paper, is your blend, your unique perspective, which is what we talk about a lot in the Accelerator. Yeah. Related to this, what's the relationship between discernment and curiosity?
For me, The discernment is your natural ability, whatever it is, your natural tendency to tell A from B and kind of saying, I think we need to make this decision based on my experience, based on my intuition, whatever that is. But all of it, one way or another, is a form of experience because you've seen similar problems in the past and they like your decision-making process. But one of the biggest value you can give is understanding why people are doing things. I just had this with a client last week. We get on a call. It was me, the CEO, and this is a client I've been with for a while, CEO, and one of the other chiefs. And it's the other chief started the meeting kind of saying, here's what we need. We need to automate these presentations because I want to do a quarterly review. And right now we're looking at like 5 different databases and it takes so much manual time and it's really important. It's going to save us a lot of time. And he was, and then the CEO was starting to engage and he was saying, well, I think we should do something else. I think maybe if we do it that way, it's going to be better. Maybe this person can do it. And so, and after like them speaking for like 22 minutes, I just stopped them. Hey guys, can I interject for a bit? And I just simply asked him, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to do this? They were so engulfed in the how and trying to engineer how exactly is it going to get done? What are the nuances? Without even questioning why is it important. I told them, listen, if you started the meeting and you told me this, I have an idea. It's going to make us $5 million a year. And first of all, you would already got my attention, right? Put aside my curiosity. You have my attention. I want to make a lot of money for the company. If you started the idea that way, I will be all ears. But you didn't. You started just saying, what do we need to do and how are we going to do it? Without why should we do it to begin with? So being very focused on impact and being able to constantly be curious and not just say yes, right? I don't automatically say yes. I automatically ask why. I always automatically ask why. Because after they tell me the why, part of the value I'm trying to bring as an executive in the company, outside of me being a CTO, is how can we get this impact the fastest and cheapest possible? And sure enough, by the way, after he showed it, I'm like, this is, you know, an $80,000 a year salary. Get this person and you'll get it. It's going to be pristine. Of course, they're not going to be as fast as automation. But I told him, if we're just looking one sprint at this, we're already spending $150,000. Like, it makes no sense. Like, it doesn't make financial sense. And you can get the capability right now without waiting for anything. And when you really need to scale, come back to the technology team, we can scale it and so on. So having, now he could have, I could have let him continue with the meeting and I could have added my discernment on the how. I kind of saying, no, I think we should use these databases and we can use this automation and we can use this engineer and maybe we can use a product off the shelf and so on and so forth. But because I first asked why, it did something a lot more important, which is clarified for everybody the impact from the engagement. And then I added my more important discernment, which is should it exist or not? Not just how we should execute on it, but should we execute on it because of that curiosity. And next was, of course, how should we execute on it?
What I love is in a previous episode, you talked about how the dynamic that you have with your clients at the executive level, one of your favorite things to do is show them how to solve a problem by not doing something or get a result by not doing something.
Yeah. How can we do this without us not doing anything? It's a great prompt. How can we do this without us not doing anything, without you not doing anything, without me not doing anything?
Yeah.
Very important.
What a gift. And all unlocked by why.
Yep.
Now, okay, we've acknowledged that bias is and does have value, especially when you're being paid to be an advisor. How do you communicate your biases in a way that builds trust rather than maybe undermining it?
So first of all, I think general kind of rules of engagement in conversation, right? Using these frames, I feel, I think, right? Subjectivity is very important. If you're coming in, now you might know the answer and you like 100% sure of the answer, but if you're coming in very aggressive with your prescription, you're probably going to create some resistance. Some defenses are going to go up. Could be because of just the energy of the communication, just literally the tone and kind of how that meeting is being developed, or just how people respond to statements, right? Like factual statements, right? So I'm very much, when I come up with ideas and prescription, even though I know they're the right one, the first way I present them is, I think we should do this. I feel we should do that. And then I also add why. As the more I can frame it as something subjective, the less I'm going to be in a position where I'm suddenly defending it. Right? If I come in with some with an objective statement, immediately, this is how we should do it, X, Y, Z, I might lose trust with someone. Maybe not with the CEO. Maybe the CEO is fine. Maybe the CEO even likes it. But you're not working in a vacuum. You have your team. You have the other executives you're collaborating with. And trust is a thing you need to build all the time. It's also a thing you lose so quick. So quick. So if you have bad tonality, if you're making things super objective without explaining anything, if you're not considering the other forces or energies in the company of kind of saying, well, I know that, you know, Jenny wants to do that and Mike wants to do that. If you're not acknowledging the other people in the group, you will lose trust. You will erode trust. The other thing is also remind people that you did what you said you're going to do. Super important. And this is something that actually took me a while to learn because I'm very execution oriented. I'm very like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And I do it. That's the best way I prefer. I prefer to just work. Let me work. Let me deliver. Don't worry about it. But the reality is you need to continually build trust with your team, with your coworkers, with your clients, whatever it is. So when you say you're going to do something, you need to remind them that you actually did it. Also, if you failed, you need to tell them, I failed. And don't defend yourself. If you're defending yourself, you're going to undermine trust because people are not going to believe in you. It's very simple. So being, frame it as subjective first and then building up the reasoning, acknowledging people, acknowledging the other constraints, the risk, the ideas, the opinions, whatever that is, very important. And also reminding them that you did something. You know, we use one of the mental models we say in the program is say what you mean what you say, and don't say it mean. It's like the simple mental model of like, be honest, be truthful, be kind. Because if you're not going to be one of those things, trust is going to erode and eventually you will find yourself out of a contract.
And it's so true. Because if someone feels judged because of how this is communicated, in any way, you lose the ability to influence them. And, you know, when it comes to these long-term relationships, the ability to engage meaningfully. And sometimes you do need to exert some influence and enroll other folks on your vision because their engagement in your vision is essential to getting it across the line.
Yeah. I like also before big meetings, this is something I learned from founding companies and having boards and investors. Is if a big thing is going to come up, isolate the variables, have individual meetings with the big influencers, certainly if they're decision makers, but any kind of influencers, because part of influence is just energy. It's like their like physical appearance as you share whatever you're sharing, right? It's not even the actual input that they have to give, or rather that is the input, right? It's how they feel about you. So doing it one-on-one, before any big meetings, big presentations, and so on, allow you to get all of the potential rejections and all the potential friction, get buy-in with them. So by the time you're presenting in the big meeting, all of them are feel like they're already read in. Like they feel like they're a part of it and you're doing it together as opposed to now you're presenting to all of them and each one of them has a personal experience that you actually don't know what's going on through their mind.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, got to socialize the ideas. Yeah. How does humility keep bias from going into arrogance?
You want to be able to say, back to what I was saying earlier, this is how I feel, this is what I think, right? So if you're saying, this is my read and here's how I'm testing it, right? You're kind of saying, I'm not certain, but this is what I'm going to do. And being able to reflect the fact that your actions are a function of your opinion explicitly. Like, this is my opinion, ergo, these are the actions that I'm taking. So being able to say not these are the best actions, but rather the way I understand a situation, the way I integrate all of the parts of this, this is the action I think we should take. And it's really about that framing. And it's a framing that Addo says, well, yeah, if you knew other facts or if you had other things to consider, you might take different action, as opposed to just saying, yeah, I'm taking this action, you know, I don't need to explain myself, right? If you do that, you're not humble, you don't come off as humble, maybe you're open, but you're not communicating as such. And again, you're building emotional friction with your peers, with your colleagues, with your partners, with your employees, which will eventually just explode. So being able to not just be humble, which is kind of saying, maybe you don't know the best answer, but this is the best answer you have right now. Actually being there, but also explicitly communicating it. So they know that you're inviting them to add information, because maybe you will change your opinion or you'll change your actions.
Yeah, it's a bridge to further conversation versus a wall that creates separation and division. Beautiful. So if someone wants to improve their judgment starting today, what's the first step?
I would say pick any assumption, one assumption you regularly make when entering a new engagement, and ask two questions this week that test that assumption instead of supporting it. Right? Don't assume. It's like when I gave you that example earlier, he came in and said, yep, we should do this, we should automate, we should, you know, spend all these resources, instead of me asking why. So you can do that for interactions you have with your colleagues, with your clients, but ideally with yourself, just noticing when you're making assumptions that because of them, you're acting in a certain way. One of the challenges that we help people go through the accelerator is them assuming that they can't do marketing or can't do sales or they can't write content, right? And then part of what we help them see and what they see also in the community is that they can. They're not special. This is very simple. Anybody can learn this. But the assumption that they're not a marketer means that they can't write content. And then that's the assumption we need to get rid of. You don't need to be a marketer to write content. Or in fact, you can write content and then become a marketer. You're just not going to become a 20-year experienced marketing executive. So being able to add specificity, pick apart your assumptions that you're making or that your clients are making, and then ask why and revisit it. Just pretend, well, what if this wasn't true? What would I do differently?
Beautiful. If this episode helped you rethink judgment, bias, and curiosity, share it with a leader who relies on their discernment. Sharp minds sharpen each other. See you next time, Lior.
See you next time.
That wraps up another episode of the CTOX podcast. We hope today's conversation gave you the tools and inspiration to advance your journey as a fractional CTO.
And don't forget, if you want more in-depth support or to connect with our community of fellow fractional CTOs, visit us at ctox.com.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the CTOX podcast.